And a very warm welcome to our fifth Zav Chat of 2024. And today we're just going to wind the clock back a few days, International Women's Day. Last week, and we had a very, very special speaker come to our breakfast in the Great Hall. And our guest speaker was Valerie Browning, who you're going to meet today, a really amazing lady. And she spoke to some of our students afterwards, really made quite an impression. So, Jared, welcome to you. And Bill, I think we'd have to say we are very, very privileged to have had someone like Valerie with us. So over to you, and let's have a bit of a talk to this amazing lady.
Thanks very much, Shane and Jared. Great to be here. And this is a somewhat of a timeless, I think, episode. And Valerie Browning, AM, welcome to Zav Chat. It's lovely to have you with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, really, because I come from a very strange part of the world, I would think, for you people.
So, Valerie, would it be nice just to for our listeners just to tell them a little bit about where you've come from and how you've come to be at Xavier with us?
Yeah, well, here we are, and I landed 2 days ago in Sydney, rushed down to Melbourne yesterday night, and basically I come from northeast Ethiopia, very close to the Red Sea. Red Sea is part of the land of the Afar people, next to Djibouti, so we're, the north of us is Eritrea, the east of us is Djibouti. It comes down to close to Addis Ababa, so we're a 900-kilometre-long region, and the whole of the western border is bordered on the what they call the Ethiopian highlands.
So, Valerie, I might take you to a comment that you made just to for our listeners to further unpack this region, because it's deeply significant, I think, in the in the history of our world and in the future of our world. You made this lovely comment, about a challenging one, of that you've had the privilege of being involved in the misery of the Horn. Maybe just again unpack a little bit what you see going on in the Horn of Africa.
Well, as I did mention, the Horn, I think, is the most valuable, wanted piece of real estate in the African continent. It is so close to the Middle East, going across Bab of Mandel, 2 hours in a homemade boat, and you're there, you're in Yemen, you're stepping into Saudi Arabia. So, for example, Djibouti has 8 different nations, including the United States, including Japan, including Germany, including all sorts of countries, as military bases there. Everybody is eager to look at the Middle East from our area. Historically, the Afar have defended the hinterland of the Ethiopia from the Ottoman Turks, from all sorts of invasions. Sure. And so the land is semi-desert, but necessarily it is highly, highly valued. And now even it has, because it's an ancient volcanic bed, it's got heaps and heaps of minerals, and everybody's there for the grab. Chinese, Russians, we've got the lot.
So you made another beautiful comment about Ethiopians, and particularly the Afar in the hinterland, ecologists. In that, that you understand your land, that you have a beautiful way of caring for that land, and yet foreign powers, as you said, are coming in to grab elements of it. But just talk to us again about what you see as the beauty of your people.
Well, I came into Afar as a married woman to one Afar man, and the way I got to know them was walking with them through the extents of the semi-desert land, walking up to 10 hours a day, 60 kilometres roughly, and going all sorts of different places. And all the way along, the Afar person taking me is explaining the good of this tree, how it is, see how it's budding, see we can work out them. They have ancient meteorology. They have all these systems of looking after the actual environment they live in, for what it's worth, the water, the grasses, the trees, etc. And yet, of course, modernity, including the Ethiopian government, wants the resources. We have one big river called the Awash River, which goes underground from Afombo onwards to the Indian Ocean. But that one, they dammed it. They put, firstly, Mitchell Kopp from Britain put a cotton plantation, then a sugar plantation. Oh, really? Now, for heaven's sake, they're growing wheat. I mean, it's just a mess. So this has taken the afar from what they call their dry season grazing and pushed them out. There are many incidences like that. So it's a disregard for a nomadic lifestyle.
So let's hear from our college captain, Gerard Crowe, for Valerie.
Yeah. So Valerie, obviously you were talking about how you walk up to 60 kilometres in a day, and it's obviously a very different lifestyle over there in Ethiopia. So is it a bit of a culture shock coming back to Australia, even though you spent a lot of your childhood there?
It's a mind blower. You guys live under enormous pressure and enormous anxiety. We don't have mental illness. We don't have suicide. We don't have any of that. That you poor people are being estranging from one another in. And so at the end of the day, last time when I came for my third grandchild's birth in the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney, I arrived back, I remember, on January 10, physically. My brain arrived on a different flight, different route, 2 weeks and 4 days later. I was so agitated when I arrived home. I couldn't believe it. Everything was wrong. Everything was upside down. Nothing was in order. I just couldn't take a minute to relax. You don't here. You're expected to do so much and to appear and so on and so on. It's really heavy on you guys.
That's a wonderful bit of perspective,
isn't it?
To add in, Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Valerie, I'm trying to picture a dad or a mum and their boys in the car heading to Xavier one morning, and they might be playing this in the car on the podcast. And I reckon they're probably asking themselves, this Valerie that they're talking to, how did you get into this life? I heard you say when you talked to the group at the breakfast that I think you were only 22 when off you went and your life changed. Could you just tell us a little bit about that story, which might help someone listening today get a bit of a feel for how your life has changed so much?
Well, I did. 50 years ago, a friend of mine put my name to a Christian mission organisation called Sudan Interior Mission to be with her, the Australian medical team, Ho-Ho, for the famine in Ethiopia of that time, 73, 74. Now, I didn't want to go. I thought she was a nutcase. I said, you've been drinking too much. What's happened? I don't know. But, I mean, for heaven's sake. And I tried to get my name off the list. The gentleman said, I've booked your ticket. I said, I don't have a document. I was at that point a migrant from Britain, so I quickly went to Chifley Square. I got Australian citizenship and then got a passport. My dear father said, you'll not go anywhere because I've got all your documents. But I said, he said to me, you better apologise to the British ambassador in Canberra because you've done something terrible. I said, what? What have I done? So, I mean, life was just turned woof. Upside down.
Clearly.
At not my choice, at not my doing, I was sitting on the flight wondering how I was going to manage with people of a different colour, people of, I didn't even know the name of the capital of Ethiopia. There you go. But I really thought I was smart enough to get myself out of this problem and come back within a week or so, and ended up staying 6 months on the first trip.
Gee whiz, and here we are 50 years later and you're still, it's a great story.
It's quite profoundly changed your life, Valerie, but you've also quite profoundly changed the lives of so many of the Ethiopian people who you've accompanied and the stories that you've shared with our students, and we had students from Loreto as well join us. were just thoroughly inspiring. And if I could just take you, it'd be lovely to share with our listeners just some elements of your life there, but maybe I might ask you to speak about the initiatives that you've put in place. You obviously, you saw need, you responded to need, and one of the things I can recall was that you've put in place some women extension workers. And so maybe just talk to us a little bit about what you've done, but maybe the differences that you're making.
Right. I walked into it, into the organisation I'm in now, the Afar Pastoralist Development Association, as the wife of one Afar. And he was a senior man. The clan leaders formed the organisation. And the clan leaders said to me in the first place, we don't need you, only for a short time. Just give us a kickstart, then you can pull away. But you must have connections. I said, I have no connections. They said, you do, you're white. I said, I know I'm white, but no connections. Anyway, so we walked into a condition where Afar had no education, no vaccination, no assistance in childbirth. And we were talking about the most people who died were females, were girls, and in fact there are more males in Afar still today than there are females in demography. So there you go. I said, well, where are the females in the organisation? They said, you must be joking. I mean, this is not a place for females to do anything but have babies, raise the children. So I said, no, I'm going to teach them literacy. So I took the first literacy class of women ever in 1999, 36 women. From that, we chose 20 women to be, as Bill says, the first women extension workers. These women then went as women who themselves have endured and suffered all the problems of female genital mutilation, early marriage, having to die young and suffer into their communities to make changes themselves. They went in as agents of change. From the 20 now, we have 263 now employed. We've trained almost 500. And these women are really the basis of women-to-women discussion. It's like a social worker. Yeah. And they are doing such amazing work in our entire organisation, having started from 34 people way back in 1994. We now have over 900 people in the field employed.
You must be amazingly proud of that. Jared?
Yeah, fantastic answer, Valerie. And you said at the breakfast a few times that you consider yourself Australia's most privileged person. Do you think this comes as a result of serving others? And can you just let us know what kind of impact do you think that that has on an individual?
The privilege is that I'm accepted anyway. I mean, why me and why accept me? I mean, really, I think I'm a load of nonsense half the time. I love fun. And so, I mean, yes. Yeah, they do. They're like a huge family to me. And I'm inspired by what they do to make the changes, not me. My place in the whole situation, I think, is to be visionary, to understand that we could do something. So we invented the way of training traditional birth attendants, stopping them from doing things that hurt the mother during the birthing process. We make our own birthing set for every delivery. We register all the pregnant mothers and so on. So we've got that, and we're working further with all sorts of people all over the world to try and improve this, because we're not anywhere near what the Royal Women's is in Melbourne by any means. Most mothers, 81% of them, deliver in the home at least, and in some places it's well over 90%. So at the end of the day, I've been talking to them even this morning on through this wonderful internet system, but they're doing a great job at the moment, right now, if you really would like to know what they're doing. Through World Food Programme, we are delivering by camel food to 38 schools.
Incredible.
38 wow. Schools who otherwise the children can't go to school because they're too hungry. There's no food in the house. And so, yeah, this is going to be the reason they break the school.
it hit me a bit like a mallet to my skull when you talked about this next part, and I'm sure everybody who heard you at that breakfast would have been the same. You started talking about the world and Australia's privileged position in the world and most of Africa's complete opposite. And you really challenged the boys and the girls at the breakfast. Are they just going to let things roll along like that, or can they actually, you know, potentially do something about it? Would you just like to talk to that? It was powerful.
Well, you know what? We do have this polarised world, and it's worse from 1973, 74 when I arrived in Ethiopia. Today, it is far, far worse. We're going in the wrong direction. We have to see each other worldwide, eye to eye. And look, some crazy guy outside the Hilton Hotel in Melbourne once said to me, "Oh, them Africans, they're probably still sleeping under trees, are they?" I mean, who told him that in the first place? And for heaven's sake, look, everybody in the world is brilliant. Everybody in the world has potential. Everybody in the world should be credited. But to credit them, you've got to listen to them. And if you think you in Australia are in the majority, well, you're not. You see? So, I mean, do we all want to go into AI? No, we don't. I mean, who's going to decide for us? I mean, really madness. Now, firstly, we need literacy. Firstly, we need education. You've stopped it. You stood in the door. So please, you know, just be an enabler. Just be a facilitator. And the things will happen beautifully over there, you know? So...
Well said. I'd love to unpack just a few of those things. You opened your remarks with something, again, that I thought was incredibly powerful when you spoke about communication, but actually are we communicating? And we were reflecting on whether it's technology or just we're so busy as a society, have we really understood the power of listening and of communicating respectfully and meaningfully? Your thoughts again on that?
Well, I think it's clear. I mean, it is the minority who rules planet Earth, who's deciding what will happen in terms of, you're calling it development, technology and so on, whereas, you know, the majority, because of what you've decided, are going to go more and more hungry. Now, is this proper? We're supposed to be by the year 2030, we're supposed to be a world without hunger. We've now got a world quadrupling the hunger. Yeah, and it's not going to happen, you see. So we have to listen and communicate. I mean, why are they, just the Red Sea water, I mean, the Bab of Mandel, who lives there? They don't care, they don't see. You see, the fishermen can't fish anymore because of the American and the British Navy down there against the Houthi, you know? And, yeah, we can't communicate across the Red Sea anymore. There's people each side who need to communicate. They need to live. But it's gone, you see, for the sake of the higher powers. Now, how does this work? This is madness.
To take it back down just to something really personal, and you're asked a question... reflecting on the little things that we can do, and one of the things that our students have the privilege of doing is promoting literacy in our programs at Friday Night School, for example, with refugee families who have more recently often arrived in Australia. And you spoke beautifully, though, about literacy helping a person not to be stuck in the past, but to be able to be engaging in the present and the future and to be able to be capable of taking control of their own destiny. It was a lovely comment about literacy and the work that you've done with the Afar people.
Yes, this is important. I mean, the world is changing so fast. They need to hang on to all the wonderful, tremendous cultures they have, but they need to also loosen themselves and free themselves of the cultures that have traditionally harmed them. But aside from that, they need to communicate with Australia, with everybody, on their own level, on their own, from their own perspective. And so literacy allows you that. It does. And at the end of the day, a literate person can be so flexible as even to change his own life if he chooses. Yeah.
One last question, Jared.
Thanks, Mr. Healy. So, Valerie, you also spoke about how it's important for us not to just stay in our little sort of bubbles here in Australia and in other countries, and to look past just the me, and to think about others. So, what message, I guess, would you give to young people about the importance of service and how paramount it is to think about other people in our day-to-day?
Well, I would even go as far as say, don't think it as service. Think it as learning. You're going to learn from other people. If they say, well, show me how to do it, fine. But you are in somebody else's backyard, so be respectful and go ahead and do it. Don't stay in what you see as security, what you see as comfort. That's a dangerous place to be. I think that's a horrible, not only boring, but dangerous place to be, because you'll shrink up like a shriveling person rather than blooming out as the person you are and being the person able to be part of the world, to contribute, to be with everything.
And Valerie, you reminded me, a line that I wrote down as you were speaking was, if life has no risk, you are not living. Yeah. It was a beautiful, you've just spoken to that beautifully. It's obviously it's been part of your life, and it's given you've lived life so deeply and thoroughly and meaningfully. It's given you life because of the risk that you took and what you've done with the opportunity.
If you hang on to yourself and say, oh, I can't, I'm going to get in pain, I'm going to be facing malaria, I'm going to be, forget it. I mean, that means, sadly, and I think most of the world is like this, they have no God in heaven. I mean, I think the world is decided by God, not by Joe Biden and not by anybody else. So in the end of the day, go for it. Enjoy it and learn from it, huh? And go a step further, for heaven's sake. You know, who are you to protect yourself, by the way?
I was a year 10 and 11 student in 73 and 74, and the Ethiopia famine dominated the news. I mean, completely dominated the news in those years. And here we are all those years later, inspired by someone like yourself, Valerie, who's put in so much brilliant time and effort. We were just so thrilled to have you at our breakfast. And today, anyone, I think, hearing Zav Chat would be similarly inspired. So on behalf of Bill, our principal, and Jared, our college captain, a big thank you for taking the time to spread the message even further today through Zav Chat. And we hope you have a very lovely stay in Australia, and most importantly, a safe trip back to Africa.
Thank you all so much, and thank you for being listeners, and thank you for taking part of the walk with me. Let's continue.
And before we go, of course, around the grounds. Jared, over to you.
Correct, Shane. And we hope that all of our listeners had a restful and enjoyable long weekend. And so this week, the wait for our world's greatest shave is finally over. We've had a huge focus on the event in the last few days, with a couple of teachers and students already having shaved. And I think Mr. Islet is currently being given some sort of crazy haircut before going skin bold tomorrow.
Now, I think, are we due for a drum roll here? Because we are getting very close to the numbers that I think you were really keen to try and attain.
That's right. I think we might be. Because if we include both the Burke Hall and the senior campus funds raised, the college has now reached its $100,000 goal.
Oh, wow.
Which is absolutely phenomenal. But of course, we would love for donations to keep coming in until tomorrow, before the big shave, where 100 or so boys will be shaving. And so all in all, it's a huge congratulations to everyone involved. Xavier College is actually the second highest, the school with the second most amount of funds raised out of all the schools in the nation now.
Oh, what a sensational effort.
Yeah, and it's been a great team effort. and a great help to many blood cancer victims in Australia. So very important as well.
And we can't forget that's what it's all about. So well done to everyone. And gee whiz, over $100,000. That is just something very, very special. I know Bill here is just quite staggered with that. So wonderful. A couple of other quick events to finish off with.
And so apart from this, we'll be having our third voluntary mass this Friday, as well as our last home cricket match for the season. So a big couple of days coming up, and all the fathers of our students are invited to get together on the Roach Oval after the cricket this Friday as well for a barbecue, so not to be missed.
Yeah, that one's coming together. Quite a good crowd coming, I believe, so that's great.
That's right. And we also had our inaugural Splash and Dash Swimming Carnivals for the years 7, 8 and 9 last week, which was great fun for all the boys involved. And finally, we've got our Past Parents Evening coming up on Thursday next week, as well as Jazz in the Rig next Friday night. A greatly anticipated event.
Yeah, a couple of great events, those. They are beauties. And I believe you've got a new segment to introduce for us, Jared.
That's right, Shane. So before we finish today, we've actually got a new segment with James Johnston called BTS.
Hey, ZabChat listeners, it's JJ here, and today I'm introducing all of you guys to a brand new segment known as Behind the Scenes with JJ. What better to start with a recently new added group known as the Catholic Youth Union with a few of our Year 11 boys today who's going to answer just a few questions about what's going on. Now, firstly, Blake, what was your sort of ideas that you wanted to bring to this group, and why did you start in the first place?
Well, I had a desire to create a space for meaningful and inclusive exploration of faith. My main aim was to provide a platform for students to engage in discussions and share experiences. I tried to focus on deepening connection with faith beyond traditional religious education and more into the home lives of students.
Now, it's a great initiative, Blake, and we're glad you started off. Now, Max, mate, you spent some time last year overseas in World Youth Day. There was a pretty, you know, phenomenal moment, and you guys spoke very passionately about, you know, enjoyment and what you got out of it. How do you reckon those experiences overseas have sort of influenced, you know, your views on faith and coming back to school, and especially on giving back to the community, such an integral part of Xavier College?
Well, the immersion I went on last year helped me deepen my faith and actually developed it throughout my whole time at Xavier. It's made me want to do more community service, and it's given me a great knowledge of my religion.
Great, it's amazing to hear, and I think I was quite jealous of you boys. It looked like a ton of good times. That's amazing. I'm going to send it back to you guys on the desk. Thanks.
Well, thanks, James. That was terrific, and we might have a few more of our little behind-the-scenes episodes as the year goes on. So, Bill, Jared, Valerie, it's been one heck of a Zav Chat today, and thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you again 7 days hence.